This episode is sponsored by Bigger City. Thank you so much for supporting us and helping our show to grow. Hello, and welcome to the Big Fat Gay Podcast, where we talk about the things that are weighing on our minds. I'm Trevor Keyson. I'm a super chub, and today I'm a satiated sandwich boy. I've had some tea. I've had a little food. I'm good. And it's the time of the afternoon where the sun's getting nice and warm, and it's all kinds of vibes happening here in our little recording living room.
I am Michael Willer. I am a chubby chaser, and I had a teeny tiny tasty Caprese salad, and it was very nice. It was a good little fresh pick-me-up for the afternoon.
Hey there, my name's Don. I'm a big chubby guy living here in sunny Hollywood, and today I am a well-rested, energized boy because I feel so mechanically enabled. I managed to fix a valve on my CPAP machine.
Good heavens.
That made breathing so much more enthusiastic last night.
I'm picturing like a wrench and like being on one of those dollies underneath the CPAP machine.
Yep. And it's the CPAP machine is on one of those like lifts, the hydraulic lifts, so I can get under and use it safely. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dan Oliverio, author, public speaker, and chubby chaser. And I am recuperating from a very nasty bit of sandwich food coma. and I'm just man enough to admit it. They won't admit it, but they all have to.
Shut up, Dan.
As we said in our first attempt, I had half my sandwich.
Welcome back to the podcast, boys and girls. This is actually our second attempt to start this podcast. Because we can't even begin to explain what happened our first time around. We just sort of wandered around the microphones and just stared at them confusedly. Tapping our noses against the microphone
stand. I had to stick my head under the tap to wake up. But we're here. We're here, and that's not the point of the show.
And the tap is fine, listeners. The tap is fine.
We are glad to have you guys back. We want to thank everyone on our Patreon for subscribing and keeping us afloat. Mm-hmm. We want to thank our sponsors and affiliates over at Big Fig, at Bigger City, and Bearskin.
Bearskin is also having a underwear. Sorry, not underwear. They have underwear. They're having a swimsuit and shorts.
Yeah,
update to their catalog.
Go check them out. They are actually really nice. Some of the products are very nice over there.
So get some cute little shorts for spring and use promo code BigFatGayPod for 15% off your order.
Yeah, the 15% goes to us. You help out the show. Help out yourself with a little discount. Everybody wins.
Everyone look at that little butt in the mirror. Whose peach is that?
And we will understand your joy because we are all together in the same room recording this week, which just makes us happy. The same way that wearing
chaotic.
An awesome bearskin swimsuit at the beach makes me feel. So.
So thank you to all of those people. And let's get into the show.
That was snapping, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I picked up by the mic.
Oh, I didn't notice.
You're gonna hear it later as noise.
Oh, great! Excellent.
You're gonna be like, what? How did I get
snapping along?
Yes, to the music. We're snapping. We're sharks. We're street sharks. Cha cha. Coming to give you the news.
Crazy boy.
Damn, we can't afford that.
This is from Washington Post. And it's interesting. So we talked about this in episode 153, also from the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. In episode 153, it was an article talking about kind of dietitian influencers being paid by diet food companies.
Was that that posts. Long ago?
Yeah.
Fuck. Oh my God.
I think it was also just basically influencers, like people, like body positive influencers getting succumbing to the Wegovy wave.
Yes, and this is, as obesity rises, big food and dietitians push anti-diet advice.
Yeah, so it's the whole, like, you know. Yeah,
we want you to be thin, and so it starts cutting into our profit margins.
It's like General Mills has sugary breakfast cereal that they want people to keep eating, but if everyone's saying, oh, you should diet and skip all of these sugary cereals, then they lose profit, right? So they can support all of the foodfluencers who are saying, hey, you eat what you want to eat. Like, no shame. by paying them to say, and you should eat our cereal.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think it's quite that nefarious. I think it's just, you have corporations, they will turn any fashion flow to their advantage. Mm. So if people are all on a health kick, then it's our cereal, you know, promotes health. If it's people are tired of diet culture, then our cereal is a rebellion against diet culture.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If it was like cancer is the most popular thing to have right now, our cereal causes cancer. they wouldn't care. They really wouldn't care.
So this article to me was like, the vibes were very weird. And this is from Washington Post, but it is in conjunction with The Examination, which is a nonprofit newsroom specializing in global public health reporting. So they're going into, you know, General Mills and these other companies paying for, you know, dietitian influencers to, you know, share cereal posts and stuff like that. And, you know, Washington Post had another story, which is like the kind of other side of like these wellness food brands doing the same thing. But I don't know. Did anyone else get weirded out by this?
I did, for sure. It felt like they were trying to put a tone to it, but not trying to. Does that make any sense? Like it's reporting, and so it's supposed to be presented neutrally, but it didn't feel that way.
It definitely wasn't neutral, and it's interesting because, like, the examples they were sharing of like one of the General Mills posts, it was this dietitian. And it's showing a bunch of cereals, and then she takes Cheerios and like cuts up a banana and blueberries and slivered almonds and puts it with the cereal. And
oh my God, a monster.
It's like they act like, you know, they're interviewing a fat woman who used to have an anti-diet dietitian. And she talks about gaining all this weight. Well,
when she went off her diet.
Well, right. You know, seeing this dietitian who told her it was like, foods are, you know, she can have, I think it was like Nutella and like donuts or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're acting like that anti-dietitians are like, yes, honey, go off, eat 5 pounds of gummy bears, listen to your body. Like, there's so much more nuance to the whole anti-dietitian
thing. It definitely feels like a misrepresentation of what that
actually is. And it's like so weird to me because I'm like, I mean, yes, but they like, it's, the whole idea is, and another example of one of the videos was a dietitian kind of saying like, don't have these like fake ice creams, you know, these like low carb, whatever, low sugar, like Halo Top ice creams. Like if you want Rocky Road ice cream, have Rocky Road ice cream. And that like you can have these foods that might have in the past been a trigger food if you had an eating disorder or something where you have a lot of shame around it, like that you can incorporate them into your diet? Like, I don't, it's
an incredibly unnuanced collection of things that gets wrapped up into the marketing campaign that General Mills and other companies are using around anti-diet dietitians.
And it completely ignores the fact that, like, food cravings or compulsions or desires, whatever you want to call them, are radically different for everyone and need to be managed differently for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, and there's two things I want to say here. One is, isn't it interesting how when you get off your restrictive eating plan, you gain weight?
Yeah. So maybe what a shock.
So maybe it's not the eating habits. Maybe it's actually, you know, what's in the food or agricultural system. And like, there's so many other places to look besides this food good, this food bad, this food good, this food bad.
But also I think, so there's a quote at the end where it's Jacob May, a dietitian and nutrition researcher at the Pennington Biomedical Research Center in Louisiana, talking about the, you know, the fat woman that they interview who talks about, you know, her experience, negative experience with the anti-diet dietitian where she gained weight. And he says that story is not unique. And he had some clients gain as much as 60 pounds in 6 months while working with anti-diet dietitians. And that, you know, it led them into the largest weight of their life.
Well, because that's what happens when you stop restricting. I mean, anyone who's lost weight on a restrictive diet will gain it back eventually. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, more. Well, so it's like they just fell off the wagon earlier.
Well, and also right. like if you get a person who is dying of thirst after crawling through the desert,
exactly,
you're yes. shocked that they want to drink a lot of extra water exactly. when they're finally yeah. allowed to, yeah.
or like you know? They have been weight cycling their entire life,
yep. Yep.
Yeah. or they are they have been living with an eating disorder and have been going through the cycle of living with the eating disorder in recovery, going back. And, you know, they are at a stable point where they are not suffering from an eating disorder, but their body is just going to like, okay, their body is deciding what is normal for me that now that I am at a sustained way of living.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a weird, like, I don't think that dietitians are for everyone, as clearly is the case with the woman they interview in this article, but also to just like make it as a, I don't know, like that, like big cereals making people fat. Like, no, they just are trying to figure out ways to make money. Like, I don't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so weird and so such an unnuanced take.
Yeah.
There is a new TikTok trend, which is just kind of like a living nightmare, called Oatzempic.
Oatzempic.
Blended oats and lime juice.
Oh, yeah. That would put up anybody.
That sounds terrible.
That would put anybody off food.
And water, Don. Yeah. There's water, too.
So
citrus oatmeal?
Not even. It's like a little bit of lime juice and oats blended with water.
Half a cup of rolled oats, a cup of water, and the juice of half a lime.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And also, basically, this is the lemonade diet.
Yeah.
With oats.
Yes.
No, it's the I'm sick, I can't eat anymore diet.
But Dan, it's the poor man's Ozempic. You lose all of this weight when you
eat. You drink that every day.
Oh!
And you can lose up to 40 pounds in 2 months.
Yeah, because you're not eating the meal that you would normally be eating when you drink that instead of the meal.
No. Yeah.
I mean,
if it works at all.
I've never done it before. Are they basically describing overnight oats?
No, not in the slightest.
Very different.
No, they're describing if you eat this one disgusting thing every day, you will lose an amazing amount of weight. And can I just say 40 pounds in 2 months is 20 pounds a month. That is a lot.
That is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, 5 pounds a week.
Yeah. And like up to, sure. Or maybe you could lose 100 pounds a week.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? You know, and if you drop dead, how many pounds is that? So
depends on how long you wait until after you're dead to measure
exactly,
yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but my point is
I still feel like I'd get criticized for my bone structure.
I guess my point is that like, yes, it is anybody can lose weight. Absolutely. How much you suffer and how long it lasts is we know the question. How much can you tolerate?
Well, and that's this article in the New York Times by Ellie Callahan is they're talking to a bunch of different doctors, nutritionists, and like asking for their opinions on like, okay, so will this work? Is this sustainable? And that is general. Like that, one of the things they say is like, you know, sure, people will lose weight doing this, but then when they go back to the regular diet, they will gain all the weight back.
Or more.
Yeah, because as they said, like you're replacing an entire meal with mm-hmm. a fucking oat juice. Like,
well, only if you're a slacker, you'll be replacing at least two meals.
Two, you can do all of you.
In fact, why eat anything else?
Oh, God.
Imagine if you could turn food into this really unpleasant experience. You never want it.
I can't help wondering.
It's Soylent Green.
All my life, there's been like an oat myth about like oats will clear up all heart problems.
Oats were big.
Oats will make you lose all your weight. Oats will make you young forever.
I feel like oats has been on the hit parade even more than broccoli.
Yeah. What is it about oats? Like, mm-hmm. Get you a publicist like the oat industry has a publicist.
I think, I think it's because it's more generally liked.
Maybe. Yeah.
People
are
a lot more willing to eat Cheerios than, broccoli slush.
And Quaker is so wholesome.
I mean, just look at the guy in the cup.
It's the cravat. It's all about
the cravat. That's right. Any weight loss plan should involve a cravat, Don.
I feel like this article, because this is in the New York Times, and I feel like it gives this like
legitimacy.
Gives it a certain degree of weight.
It gives it so much more credence than it deserves.
Well, or you could see it as the opposite of like debunking this thing that's gone way too far.
Which is the article. It is debunking.
Yeah.
Ultimately. Well, I like one of the doctors is like, I mean, so like a way to get the same effect would be to like just make actual oatmeal with like some milk and have some fruit with it and some nuts. And it's like a balanced meal and it will kind of have the same effect of like if you feel full from that, you would feel full from this.
See, you might finish that. And if you put lime in your
it'll oats, be disgusting.
You'll disgust and you won't eat it all. And that's the secret.
I mean, I don't know. It's weird because like, and some of the, I've seen a lot of discourse around this and people were comparing it to the cabbage soup diet.
Yes.
I don't know. It's weird. I don't. And enjoy some cabbage in a normal way.
Have some
enjoy some oats in a normal way. It's not going to be Ozempic. It's weird to.
It's just.
Yeah.
Stupid.
I mean, we say Ozempic so that people will notice.
Because it's trendy.
It's trendy.
Yeah. That's how you get views.
Yeah.
Wait, how do we make cabbage as a, like Ozempic?
I'm sorry. You mean Ozempigenic?
Okay. Oh, God. Oh, God. All right, let's get out of this.
Yeah.
Free us.
You hear that, listeners?
It's the breaking the sound barrier.
It's the winds of 2024. We're flying, we're soaring, and our little feet are touching down. We made it. Fat Watch 2024. And I don't know, this week we're in Korea.
Yeah, and I got to say, this is another one of those and water is wet studies. If for anyone who's ever watched any K-drama at all.
This is K-weight drama now.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is from ANN.
Oh, what's that? Asia News Network.
Yes.
And the title is Fat Phobia Pervasive in Korea. Dun, dun, dun!
Should we attempt the writer's name?
Song Sung-hoon.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. I'm going to declare that proper and then we can move forward. Kind of breaking down like how, because we like anti-fat bias, fat phobia in Korea, which we've kind of brushed over. I feel like a lot of times it's kind of like, oh yeah, in Asian cultures, it's not nearly as stigmatized as it is here.
No, it's not nearly as taboo.
Or like taboo.
It's not taboo. It's absolutely stigmatized. Yeah. And that's an important difference that I think Americans don't appreciate is, no, it's terrible. We're just not going to hide it.
Right.
Yeah. They're not going to be like, oh, well, he's really, well, you know, big bone. Yeah. They're not going to do that.
Isn't that kind like, of, the first quote in the article is, your face looks good, which is code for you've gotten fat.
Yeah, you've gotten fat.
Which is kind of that. So well, is that changing?
That's one of those stories that I hear a lot when talking with Asian friends is the stuff like, you'd be so pretty only if, mm-hmm. right? All those stories that were old fashioned expressions for the shitty things people used mm-hmm. to say to fat people are still in current usage over in Korea.
Yeah.
And a lot of Asian.
Well,
countries.
And I do think Michael's right. I think the politer way to say it, or like, yeah. a friend will say your face looks really good, but your mother will tell you the truth and you're fat.
Yeah. Well, and it also gets coupled up with that, like physical boundaries tend to be a little different in a lot of Asian countries than they are in America. So I've told this story before. I was in the movie Charlie's Angels 2. I'm playing a Mongolian warlord or something. And the majority of the Asian cast members I was working with were Asian immigrants. They were not Asian American. And so they still had more Asian behavioral,
culture,
right? Yeah. So while we were in holding, which is where they keep all the extras together, you hang out and you're chatting and everything. Every hour, I'd have at least one guy walking up to me and just very casually looking at me and saying like, wow, you're so big. And just grabbing hold of my chest or my stomach and just rubbing it.
Yeah.
You know, just like, wow, you're so big. Mm-hmm. Right. And I have a hard time imagining any American doing that. You know,
I mean, maybe at Bigger Vangs. Yeah.
It's probably for
did they
reasons.
Say no homo afterwards?
Well, most of them wanted to start up a conversation afterwards.
Because they never met something of your dimension.
Exactly. You know, and there were two of us on set and the other guy was getting the same thing.
Absolutely. So. And you know, I'm sure you had your separate lines.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Separate lines. Yeah,
four, line for me to the left. Line
signing
for me
autographs.
To the right.
Yeah. So exactly. This article goes into a deep dive in how.
Yeah. And yes, the answer is that. I think you see this, it's not just Asian culture, although I think where this comes from in some cases is you have a Confucian culture, which is all about societal harmony. Mm-hmm. And so there is increased pressure, not just to fit in, but also the family dynamic. And that's why I think you also see a lot of really horrible family comments in other cultures where family is really central. Yeah. And therefore it's the family's job to get you in shape. It's the family's job to tell you you're too fat. It's the family's job to make sure you conform.
And especially in a culture where anything that makes you stand out is a bad thing. Right. Well, so a physical thing like that, that you can't conceal is like, oh my God, it's a burden for the whole family.
Well, I mean, my favorite quote that illustrates the difference between, you know, Western culture and in this case, Japanese culture is in America, we say the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Mm-hmm. In Japan, it's the nail that sticks up gets pounded down.
Mm. Yeah.
If you think similar of phrases, but meaning very different things.
Yeah, if a floor, thinking of a floor that has a nail sticking up, that gets pounded down.
Yeah. Conform. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is in Fat Watch because it's sort of shining a light on it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, so one of the interesting kind of observations, they're talking to somebody named Min So Young, I hope, who was talking, it's a 31-year-old person who's talking about, you know, like amongst my friends, you know, we'll use expressions like, you know, if you enjoyed it, it's zero calories. Or if it's delicious, you won't get fat. Like kind of saying like, we're just going to enjoy what we want, like, and kind of like brush off the kind of obsession with calorie counting and, you know, torturing yourself over whether or not it's going to be good for you. Like if you enjoy it, just eat it. But then it's, I guess the article's kind of questioning, like, is that in and of itself stigmatizing?
Yeah. Right, because the point is you must address the fact that you're eating something forbidden.
Yeah.
It must be addressed, and you can joke about it, you can feel guilty about it, but it must be addressed because it is never in, it's never not there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's yes, exactly. But I thought that was interesting because it's one of those more like surreptitious, like it's something that you would never really think twice about, most people. Like you wouldn't look at that and go like, "Oh, this could be harmful." To the like the way that people look at like fatness.
Yeah, I don't think it's harmful, and I'm not sure that's the point, although maybe. But I think the real insidiousness behind it is it shows the attention to the good and bad of food. Like am I being good? Am I being bad? If I'm being bad, can I joke it off?
The article literally says some critics say the expressions ironically underscore the extensive focus on weight management.
Correct? Yes, yeah. So they do. And that it absolutely does. But that what I'm saying is I don't think that it's a toxic comment. Like it's not like saying, oh, Don, you sure you should be eating that?
Yeah.
It's when I eat it and I go, oh boy, I guess I have to work this off in the gym tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's highlighting the fascination and focus with good and bad, good and bad, good and bad, good and bad body, food, whatever.
And I think this is what you're talking about, Michael, but the fact that there is this phrase, right? This, I don't speak Korean. I'm going to mutilate this. Jagigwali?
Oh.
Which literally just means doing a good job at self-management as pertaining to weight.
And when I taught ESL, I had a lot of Korean students who would say this. They're like, oh, you have very good self-management. What they would say is they wouldn't say self-management. They'd say self-control.
Yeah.
And when I first started hearing that, I'm like, what do you mean self-control? Like, you know, you think of that like, oh, I'm out of control. And what they mean is what that is, right? And that's how they translated it, is self-control. And it's this virtue, I think we would call it impulse control.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it's so specific to weight. Like if someone told me that I had good self-control, I don't know if I'd immediately start thinking in terms of weight, right?
Oh, I've had, go ahead.
I think that's more like abstinence from alcohol. That's what I would be thinking.
I cannot tell you the number of times, like let's say a teacher's break room, right? And I'm in there and they've got some, I'm going to call them trashy cupcakes. I know people love these cupcakes, but like the kind of cupcakes you get from Safeway.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I know what those taste like. I don't need to taste that. Like, I'm not tempted by that.
Yeah.
And I will say, and they'll go like, oh, Dan, do you want some cupcakes? And I'll go, no, thanks. And they're like, wow, you have such self-control. I'm like, no, they're just crappy cupcakes. You know, it's like, I am not even tempted. It's not because I'm a health nut. It's not because I work out. It's because I I mean, you on
it's
the podcast.
Dan only eats the fancy kibble. Oh.
Yes, it's totally that. I only eat the wet food. I don't want none of your kibble.
I just think it's so interesting because they talk in the article about the subway signs with, you know, the fat person pointing to the elevator and the thin person pointing to the stairs that we talked about in episode 161. I looked it up, people.
Oh my God.
Doing like all the research.
Archivist. Yeah. But just seeing like that and kind of the discussion around that versus like in this, they're talking about, you know, it's something of the, you know, the doctor saying like, well, in order to treat obesity, we have to be sympathetic towards the obese, which is like, oh, like we're almost there. We're getting close. And to just like, and to see that like these conversations are happening, I mean, albeit in like a problematic way, but it's like, we're getting there. We just got to hone in. We got to shear down the sheep.
It could have been way worse. Like,
yeah,
I feel like this was a very benign article in the way that it's presented put together.
Though it, again, like reading through the article, it feels like so much of the stuff like there's an interview with the Korean plus size model at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where a lot of these complaints sound like things we were talking about 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like they're just a little bit behind the curve on where America is. But they'll get there.
we're going to get really there. Unlucky. And we're going to try to get there and then they'll get there and everyone, we're going to cross the finish line at some point together.
So it's been a somewhat intense first half of the episode, and it would be nice to kind of just kick back and tell some stories.
Take off your shoes.
Yeah.
Grab a pillow. We're going to the little story time rug.
Yeah. We're going to sit down, get some hot cocoa, turn the fire on because it's actually chilly, weirdly chilly this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do story time. Story time part whatever we're at now, 4, I think.
Story time X colon Genesis. And Genesis is spelt with a Y.
It's a Terminator reference.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Those are the steps.
So today's today's theme is how each of us have dealt with a future assassin sent back and tried to kill us.
Oh, yeah. I remember my first one.
Michael, I think.
Or it hasn't happened yet.
I think you should mine kind of plays off yours.
Okay. I'll start with Lucy. So my partner and I adopted 2 cats about a year ago. Mm. One of them is an older cat. She's 16 now. And the other one's younger. Teddy, the younger one, is a big cat. He's like 17 pounds, like long. He looks like a mini tiger, like just big. He's a little chubby, but he's also just like fucking muscled. And Lucy is a little tiny cat that had hyperthyroidism, which means that there's a few symptoms associated, but weight loss is one of them and not being able to sort of put weight on, which for an older pet can be problematic, like that, you know, can be an issue. And so the vet that we took her to said, hey, like, here's how we can treat it. We want to like keep track of like, you know, how like hyperactive she is. That's another symptom. You know, and, you know, we want to make sure that she's not like losing too much weight. These are the things we need to look out for as symptoms that it's not being treated right. So we got this food to medicate, you know, it's like prescription food. She goes on it. Everything seems great. And in the interim, because she's an older cat, we have an at-home vet visit with a different vet service. So just people that can kind of show up because she freaks out in a carrier.
This cat has better health care than a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things. Like we walked in eyes open. We knew she was an older cat. And so the vet that comes to like visit just to like, for whatever reasons, because she's a very persnickety cat, you know, weighs her, not knowing kind of all of the other background, and like is like, oh, well, you know, her health looks really good and her health is really good. But, you know, she could stand to lose a pound, you know, like how much exercise does she get? Like maybe don't feed her as much. And we're like, well, first of all, Siamese cat, like you kind of have to feed them more regularly because they throw up more because of their stomachs. So like, you know, it's one of those things, but also like, she's not eating that. Like, it just seemed like a weird suggestion. And they kept saying that over the course of several months.
And this is a cat historically who's been underweight.
Yeah. Or not even underweight, but just the risk of having untreated hyperthyroidism is that she won't be able to gain weight. And as an older cat, that can be a problem. Mm-hmm. And so we take her back to the vet after probably 6 months of this, back to the original vet. Mm-hmm. For kind of a check-in. And the first thing that the vet says is, oh, it looks like she's gained a pound. That's great. That's exactly what we want. Her hyperthyroidism is treated really well. We're going to do some blood work, but it's probably everything's good.
And isn't that funny?
And I'm like, you know,
it's almost like people.
It's just no different. It's so stupid. And I just, it matters not, because her health is great and everything else is fine. And she doesn't know the difference. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, why am I having to kind of manage my other vet telling her that telling us that we need to get her to lose weight? Like it's
and having to put
stupid.
having to put your hands over the cat's ears so she doesn't hear derogatory comments.
She's very sensitive. She is so sensitive. It's like, God, it's like, I guess my point was, like, it would be great if they could have just focused on what her actual health concerns were and then addressed her weight according to that.
Wait, what is that? I've never heard of that before.
Can we just focus on the actual problem? You know, like, because it's very clearly, anyway.
Well, you know, if she lost some weight, she might not be so old.
Oh, that's great. I've gotten the same advice.
Medical fat phobia for cats also.
For cats, yeah. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's
Trevor, I want to know what the connection is.
Okay, so so it's kind of two stories in one. It's a little twofer. So a couple weeks ago, maybe last month, my mom was like putting together a little care package for my cousin's kids, because my cousin passed away, and just like the family's going through a lot. My mom's like, I want to do something nice for his kids. So she went to Target and got some like books and some like these big, like giant gummy bears. And they were sitting at her place, and my sister came over and she saw the gummy bears, and she's like, oh, so you get those for Trevor? And I'm like, my mom laughed and said, like, oh no, it's for, you know, Tom's kids. And my sister laughed, and then, you know, whatever. And then my brother comes later. He's like, oh, did you get that for Trevor? And I just thought it was funny. And she's like, I'm not, just so, this isn't like my way of saying I'm, you know, tricking you into thinking like you're not going to get the gummy bears. Like, it's just, I thought it was funny that like both your brother and sister bought these big gummy bears.
We're not going to throw you a party, but you're secretly planning them a party. She wasn't trying to tell him the story.
And then end up sending me gummy bears.
Right.
Oh.
Like, yeah, she's like, I just want to share the story.
God, that's convoluted.
Not that I'm telling you this because
I don't live in a world like that.
No, this is foreign. This is alien.
Yeah. But so that's like this kind of little prelude. And then my mom has also been like going through some health stuff. She's getting older. It's a whole thing. I'm not really going to get into the full thing of that. But she has been going to a new doctor and been going regularly, and at one of her last appointments, they weighed her, and she was like, you know, it was a good weight. Like, it's the first time I've really been at the doctor and been like, yeah, that's a good weight. And just the whole time, you know, okay. I couldn't really pay attention after that, because I was just thinking like, oh, it's a
isn't
it's
she
a
really
weight.
Frail?
Yes, very. But it was this whole thing, and like, I was like, is she gonna say the number?
No, oh.
Absolutely.
No, but
absolutely.
She did not. But she's like, it's a good way. And she's
that would be bragging.
Does your mother deal with a weight problem or?
I mean, my mom,
she's a woman. I mean, yeah,
you know,
it's always attached, you know,
was always kind of like, I don't know, I think of her sisters and like of her family, like larger.
Okay.
And she was like kind of fat, you know, for a couple of years. And
I
like,
mean, you had to get it from somebody.
Yeah. Like her weight just kind of would fluctuate. But when she moved down to Florida, she just like lost a lot of weight, like a lot.
It's hot down there.
Well, part of it was the Chardonnay diet, but that's
oh yeah.
But so it was just like weird to see her like so like, yeah, it's a good weight. Something like so fixated on it. And like it came up in multiple conversations.
No, but I love this. That, like, she was like, I couldn't even listen to the doctor after that. I was in such a high.
She was from in seventh heaven.
Yeah.
But so then a lot of stuff going on. Things
second
have been,
part.
Yeah. And like, just, it's been a rough month for her. And like, there was this weird family stuff going on. And I was like, oh, like, I'd sent my family some C's, See's Candy for Christmas. Just it's like a little
very famous local LA local chocolate chocolatier.
It's the chocolate we push on you when you go through the airport.
Yes, yes.
It's, which means it's local.
Yeah. It's local, but it's not small.
Yeah,
yeah,
but it's delicious.
But it's it was like little stocking stuffers. Like they have a. The C's is known for their Bordeaux kind of chocolate truffle things.
It is the best. It's like a brown sugar base, and it's like,
yeah.
And I mean, you know, people, it's me saying this.
Yeah,
I don't go in for all sorts of candy. This is luscious candy.
Yeah.
But so like, I sent that at Christmas, and like, my mom was absolutely obsessed with it. And I saw they had like Bordeaux eggs, and it was like a little thing. It's like, oh, some like little.
Man.
Some C's eggs and jelly beans. And like, my mom also really likes jelly beans. So like, oh, like I'll send her this little C's thing. It'll be a nice treat. She's had like, you know, Easter laid back thing. She can just like hang out in her recliner and have some candy.
Mm-hmm.
And she, on Easter day sent me a text like, oh, I'm digging into an egg. And like, my mom also has a thing where, anything sweet, she'll just like fall asleep right after.
Okay.
She's not, crash. Yeah, just like she is so prone to a sugar crash. So I tried calling her like right after she sent that text, but she was like already out.
You're already out.
And then she had another doctor's appointment. Like, so that was Sunday. She sent the text and she had her Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Tuesday she has a doctor's appointment and they weigh her and she gained a pound. Oh. 1 pound.
Oh no.
Jesus and she's Christ. Like, I gained a pound.
Wow.
I had a good like weight and I gained a pound. And she's weight. Like, you know, it's the egg.
That pound was her wake up.
You know.
Now, to be clear, did the egg weigh a pound?
No. It was, and,
but well, it's her own like, damn fault for buying ostrich eggs.
No. Tell them the revelation.
Yes. So her revelation about the egg. Oh, you know, so I was eating the egg and I was looking at it. I'm like, oh. It's only 120 calories. That's pretty good for, you know, the egg. And it's like, I don't know, the you know, it's like about like this big.
The size of
it's
a large egg.
Like a Reese's, you know, how Reese's have eggs. It's large. It's like two to three bites.
And she, you know, ate it. And then she saw on the wrapper, it's like, oh, it's actually two servings. It's not 120 calories. It's two. So it's 240 calories.
Well, because the people at C's to make it look better have decided that half an egg is a serving.
It's two.
You think about eating the whole egg.
Like I'm saying, it's two or three bites. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But like now, like it's just like she, it just like kind of like. And she wasn't like too upset. But she was like, it was a thing where she like made a point to tell me, and like, and it's because I had that egg,
and it's your fault.
Oh God! Oh,
yeah, you had to send the eggs.
No, didn't she say like, and I'm blaming you?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. At that,
yeah.
Jeez. As a person who can gain a pound between the bathroom scale in the morning and the doctor's office at noon, you know, like that's
one. How about six?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I mean,
honestly, like my day long variance is probably about 5 pounds.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, have a glass of water. There's your pound.
Yeah, man, that's wild.
It's just silly.
That's obsessive. Silly. A single pound.
Well, Dan, what's your story today?
All right.
Dan?
So this actually is a friend of mine who was trying to get on Wegovy and not really fat, but like, well, everybody's on Wegovy and it's Hollywood.
It's the in thing to do.
Right?
Yeah.
So finally, and the thing is that Wegovy is ridiculously expensive unless you get it through insurance. And then it's just, and then there are coupons and whatever. The point was, it was a whole thing about getting pre-authorized and finally getting on Wegovy. Well, guess what? The Wegovy didn't work. Either because he wasn't fat enough or because for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a lot of the side effects, but none of which were really weight loss. And so it was like, you know, and so then it came up time for the renewal and it's like, well, maybe we shouldn't renew this. And because then they wanted all these stats about how much weight have you lost on the drug? Because they're not going to renew the insurance isn't going to pay for it again if it's not showing any results.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I get that. So, so his doctor said like, well, why don't we try this new drug?
Okay.
And like, okay. And so, but of course it has to be pre-authorized. So it's a different weight loss drug, but it's the same, you know, IGF or the one, whatever that thing is. Anyway, and it's denied. And it's like, well, why is it being denied? Oh, because he's not fat enough. And so it's this interesting push me pull you between the pharmaceutical companies and the consumer base of wanting the drug, not paying for the drugs being very, I mean, sometimes it's just not effective. I mean, not every drug works on everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was just odd to have all that back and forth. But, you know, the constant being, you know, insurance companies are in the business of denying care. Mm-hmm. That's the constant.
The only way you seem to actually get approval for them is like if you can make the claim that, oh, it's going to be preventative for this other thing that would cost you more money, then right. The insurance companies are willing to pay.
Well, apparently that was good enough for Wegovy, for recommending Wegovy, but not good enough for this other drug, which has the same mechanism of action.
And but costs more.
Yeah. But I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
Wow.
Man.
It's so weird.
Poor guy.
I don't know. I know other people that like, I think especially in like certain, like, I don't know, civilian high pressure, like where they would be, I don't know, like New York coastal, like very like business, like CEO people who are like on.
No, a Los Angeles realtor.
Huh.
Has absolutely pressure to look a certain way.
Yeah, that's valid.
Yeah.
Los Angeles realtor.
I mean, Los Angeles, anything.
No, but realtor, because it's such a look business.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have more people sitting on your face in Los Angeles. I mean, with those bus stops.
You might need
ads.
To explain that.
They put their faces on bus stops around here, so you're sitting on a bench with that person's face on it.
Yeah, and it's all about how good do you look, and you want to have a good, and people are like, oh, you should try my realtor. He's gorgeous.
Yeah, I've actually heard that sentence. Oh, it's really weird.
Oh. Well, because it's, I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy job. I'm just saying that it is very much a looks business. Mm-hmm. That's what most people look for in their business partner at that, because it's, they're a broker. I mean, they're a go-between.
Yep. I hate that.
It's not like they have exclusive houses, like only they can show you.
I mean, you know? But I guess at the same time, I never have seen like an unattractive realtor. Like,
exactly.
I'm thinking like the kind of like, it's like jump scare music. They like, they're like, hello. I don't know.
I think realtor, and maybe the other thing that occurs to me is New York finance bro. Mm-hmm. New York Sorry. Finance bro is very looked
I think in. Michael's having a 30 Rock moment, and I think cosmetic I know exactly surgeon. What he's thinking.
Yeah. Cosmetic surgeons are always hot from my experience. Yeah. Like disturbingly so.
Yeah.
Or at least have one hot partner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because Thea's like, well, why did you get your own service?
All right. Well, my story today is, it's not a fat story this time. I figured I would dip into one of our other name roots and go a gay story this time.
Okay.
And talk about my first stage kiss.
I remember my first kiss, which was my first stage kiss.
Oh, really? That was your first kiss and your first stage kiss were the same thing?
Yep.
Mine was not, but let me tell the story. So I was a playwriting a major for a lot of my college career.
Really?
Because you could make your own major there.
Okay.
So I was a double playwriting and psychology. I only graduated with psychology because I didn't want to do free labor for the college.
Interesting.
But that gave me the opportunity to take a lot of theater classes in college that most people wouldn't. So in my freshman year, my very first semester, I took sort of an intro to theater class. And this guy came in as a guest lecturer. His name was Dick Trousdale. I know.
That is a name.
He was the director of our college, and he reminded me a lot of Tim Gunn. He was this very kind of tall, thin, very proper, dignified effete.
That's
man.
Like a British porn star.
Yeah, I know. Dick Trousdale sounds like one of Blanche's dates.
Dick Trousdale's awesome
gonna be, come take me down to the.
He was an awesome guy. He did write by me over the years. But he came in, he gave a general introduction to theater, and he brought an actor he was working with on a production in to talk as well. And one of the things the two of them went down a path of was talking about being gay in theater.
Really?
Which at that point, I'm 18 in Massachusetts, New England, in the 90s, no one talked about that stuff. Yeah. And it was mind blowing.
Nice.
Not just because Dick Trousdale was very intelligent, well-spoken person able to convey it, but because the actor they brought in was smoking hot. Oh my God. Oh, my little 18-year-old brain was just exploding with hormones looking at this guy.
That's great.
Right? Just so beautiful. And then 2 years later, Dick Trousdale asked me to act in a workshop that he was doing with this play. By coincidence, it's also the first time I ever had to do drag in something. I did drag and another part in the play. And what I didn't know was that that actor from my freshman class, they would remain friends, and he was in the area, and Dick asked him to be the lead, who was my scene partner and romantic interest in the show. Now, keep in mind, like, he is beautiful, right? But conventionally mainstream, gorgeous. I never felt that way, especially at age 20, right? Mm. And so the idea of having to stand next to him on stage, have people actually believe that we were interested in each other.
Wait, and you're in a dress?
Not in the makeout scene. Play drag as a separate character and then the love interest for him.
Wait, is a different character?
A different character.
So you're doubling. Okay.
Doubling.
Okay.
Now, I had so many nerves.
Oh, I bet.
That first rehearsal, and that first rehearsal was in front of an audience too. And then we had a lot.
Wait, the first dress rehearsal,
the tech rehearsal, the final one before you open is in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And we hadn't done the kiss during rehearsals.
What?
It wasn't that kind of production. It wasn't a full scale production, right?
Still.
Yeah, but I don't know why they didn't want to, but they didn't want to. So I was like, okay, fine. And so the night before that rehearsal, I'm like, I'm sweating bullets. It's like, I'm going to have to kiss this guy. And so I remember, like, right before, like, I wasn't sure if we were actually going to do the kiss in that moment or not. And so there are people 10 feet away. I can see them at the edge of the lights. He is fucking beautiful right next to me. And I am slipping out of character because I'm so feeling anxious and nervous about this. And I remember turning towards him and actually going, like, I don't know what happens now, when his mouth is just suddenly on mine.
Oh, God.
Whoa.
Right.
So he kissed you.
He boom on me.
Awesome.
Right. And like, and I wasn't even sure if it was going to happen at that point.
Yeah.
And not only was it like a very performative kiss, but like, okay, so keep in mind, I'm 20 and this guy is so much more older and so much more experienced than me. He had to have been 25.
I was going
to
say,
maybe 26, right? Uh-huh. So not necessarily
clearly a master of the art.
Yeah, not necessarily super professional yet. So when I felt the tongue, understand. So I was like, I didn't see this coming, and I didn't know if that was normal. I didn't know what I should be doing.
And it was your first kiss.
It was my first stage kiss,
but not your first kiss.
Not my first kiss, but my first stage kiss. Okay. And I don't remember anything after the tongue, right? Like, we apparently finished the performance because I'm here. I'm no longer on that stage.
You didn't wake up in a hospital.
Yeah, but the amount of anxiety, I remember how much anxiety led up to that moment.
Oh my gosh.
The surprise of it starting, and then I remember nothing else.
I hate that you didn't even get to enjoy it.
No enjoyment whatsoever.
I don't even
remember if I ever talked to him again after that.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that was my first stage kiss.
I was going to ask this earlier, but I didn't want to potentially ruin the story. Was he gay?
He was gay, yes.
Okay.
And I knew he was gay because of that freshman lecture where him and the director talked about being gay in the world.
Okay, I wasn't sure why he was brought in.
You know? Yeah, so not only was he just a beautiful actor,
but he was also
a gay role model for me.
Oh my God.
Because I haven't had many people talk about existing in the world as a gay man.
Which I think, does that make it easier or harder? Because if they're gay, they're potential.
It was harder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a lovely experience. I have no bad feelings about it.
Oh, yeah, my first,
very messed up.
My first kiss and stage kiss was absolutely the opposite of that.
Was it with a man or was it a woman?
Nope. It was with Doreen.
Doreen,
who was this sort of, I mean, I don't know what she was like in her personal life. She was just sort
I feel
of
like if your name's Doreen, you have to talk in this voice and at least smoke two packs a day.
She was sort of said like this, and she was a smoker. And you know she's 18, right?
She's not there yet.
And she's just her limbs are just everywhere, meaning that she's just not like there's something off.
Okay.
There's something off because she's not like she's always sitting off kilter. The arms and legs are always dangling in some direction.
Did she think she was being like model-esque?
I don't think so. I think it was more we actually studied we had a character class, and the professor did not use her as an example, but it was like, oh, that character type is her. Whereas it was called the schizoid body type. Where like where it's just like everything is everywhere, and it's
that's
just not
very specific.
Like the energy is just going off in weird directions, and that was
interesting.
And you know that the head is never on top of the body; it's just always to the side, or it's back, or it's forward. And so anyway, we're doing Tennessee Williams. We're doing not Summer and Smoke. One of the really sultry scenes, and it's a scene class, and I have to kiss her, and she's a smoker, and
oh god,
and she's just like not appealing in any. I mean, she's perfectly fine. I mean, she wasn't ugly, but it was just like there is nothing about this that I find.
Yeah,
no way, no way. I would never kiss this person ever. I would never hug this person probably unless she were in dire straits. But you know, it's like, and this is my first kiss.
Well, oh boy,
yeah.
Oh boy. First kiss with a smoker.
Well, and again,
I remember the first time I kissed a smoker.
You know, and a woman, and someone who's just like off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it was just, it's so many, no, this is not working for me.
I call what you're describing the helter skelter thing.
Yes, very good. Yeah, that would be good. That would be a good description.
Do we have a tip for the day, Trevor?
We certainly do.
Whee!
Do you need a big boy coloring book? And by that, I mean like a... A coloring book of pictures of big boys.
I just suddenly saw several of our listeners coming at us with finger paints.
I mean, you can finger paint these big boys.
Oh, my.
DJ Kirkland has created a coloring book of his pinup big boys.
Can I just say that I read this and I thought, like, wait, it's a generic coloring book?
Kirkland? No.
Oh, yeah, Costco's come up with a coloring book. No. DJ Kirkland.
Yes, artist DJ Kirkland, who, I mean, we talked about his book way back in the, I think, single digit, but double digit podcast episodes.
Oh, shit.
Mage. But check it out. You can get it from his website, djkirkland.com, in his shop. It is how many big boys? 20 big and beefy cuties.
Oh boy.
8.5 by 11. Grab your colored pencils, your markers.
Are these like
pick up a tool that fits your hand?
Are these kid friendly big boys?
No,
okay.
This is not particularly.
Because coloring book kind of implies a certain age demographic. So
not anymore, Michael. We're not in a brave new world of adult coloring books.
Yeah. Just clarifying it.
Who'd give a coloring book to a kid? That's sick.
I mean, if you had given me that coloring book when I was a kid,
he would have never left his
color ever. Just like,
yeah, he would have been sharpening his Crayola.
Gross.
I mean, none of it would ever get colored because you'd never be able to peel it open.
Oh, boy.
Did you like it? I ruined it.
Oh. Can I have another? Okay, let's get out of it.
Well, yeah, what's the record. For our bit today, all four of us are storytellers. All of us are narrators or book writers or directors. So I'm curious, as a quick story, tell us about a story that made you into the storyteller that you are today.
Our inspiration, as it were.
Yeah. Do you remember something that, like, a story that you connected to that was something that was formative, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can start it off because
go.
I've thought about it longer than either of you. Mine was, I think I might have mentioned this on the show before. I most likely became a storyteller out of spite. when I was a little kid,
watching The Real Housewives.
My parents were very obsessed with things that were age appropriate for me, right? And so I had a tendency to reach for things that were a little bit outside my age range, I guess. And not in a gross sort of way, but like when I was a little kid, I had there was a comic book that was in my room. I don't know how I got it because apparently my parents didn't give it to me. I even remember the cover. It was in a sewer. And Batman and Superman are pinned up against the wall by Swamp Thing, who has his hand across both their chests. And they both look horrified and terrified of being pinned down by him. And my mom took it away from me because she said, this is too old for you.
What?
right?
What?
And comic books in general were too old. So she took
comic books away. Are too old for you?
Yeah. This,
I mean, that's insane.
And that, I can point to that moment as being the most definitive moment that turned me into a reader. Mm-hmm. Because the minute you try to take away anything from me,
this must be good.
All about it, right?
Yeah.
In high school, I had a teacher try and take away an L. Ron Hubbard book from me.
Oh.
I just thought it was a sci-fi book. And they're like, no, this is a bad book. You shouldn't be reading it. They tried to take it away.
It's a gateway book.
I finished that book. I finished it out of spite because it was the dumbest, most stupid, boring book I've ever read in my life.
Battlefield Earth.
Yep.
Don't be careful. The Scientologists are listening.
It was shitty. It was a shit. I'm sorry. If that's the foundation of your religion, you need better books.
Oh, now a major motion picture.
Yeah.
And so, like, I can't point to anything that's more formative than that moment of someone trying to say, no, you can't have this.
I love that you hated it and finished it anyway. You're out of spite.
Absolutely. Just completely. That is me to the T.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. It's funny because I haven't really thought about this in a very long time. But you asking that question, I flashed on this memory, which I don't think you've ever heard this story, Dan.
Wow.
That's impossible.
So I was in kindergarten, and we were having circus day.
Circus
day? Yes.
Well, it was. This is, yeah.
Shut up.
Was this at donut school?
Yes, it was.
There's a whole story behind
donut
it.
Donut school?
Yeah, he went to donut
school. This was at St. Athanasius.
St. what?
Athanasius.
Okay.
I heard St. Efficacious. No. Like, that's awesome.
Oh, it was not that.
I want to be St. Efficacious.
St. Athanasius, we were having circus day, which was death-defying acts. Okay. For the entire, everyone would like had different circus roles. There was like someone who was the tightrope walker where like the teacher set up like
a thing of blocks
going. And I don't know how I ended up as this. I don't know if I requested it and then regretted it. I was a clown.
Oh.
And I had to do a little show and it was like a puppet show. And I just remember everything about it. I was so nervous and terrified. And I think someone was helping me and I'm guessing it was my brother. And it was like this like clown puppet show thing.
Ooh.
And I just remember the lead up to it and just being like so nervous and like sick to my stomach. And it's starting and kind of that like movie, like, you know, anxiety, like white nut, like the sound goes away and it's just a high-pitched ringing. And then I was like, fuck it, I'll do it live. And going off and like kind of improvising and like, it was very kind of like Punch and Judy.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And everyone loved it. And I was just like, yes. And just like, it fed into, like, it was completely unhinged. It didn't make any sense. It was very,
How old were you?
I was like a kindergartner.
Kindergarten. Yeah.
And like, but it just was going so well, just like doing something on the fly and just, I think, just like crushing beautiful. Probably my brother's hand with like, I remember like just grabbing stuff, like doing the whole like little like da, 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 da. And I don't know. I just, that is what I thought of when you asked that question. That
entertaining.
I love that.
People. Entertaining.
That's people. A great story, sweetie.
Huh. That's interesting. Cause I didn't have anything quite like that, but I was the kid for the brief stint of time around that age where I kind of fit in with my peers, I was kind of the kid who did like funny voices and made people laugh and was kind of the class clown and always, I don't know, that was kind of my spot, my role that I filled. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't, I don't think that was what led me to, I'm pretty sure I know what it was, which was seeing Star Wars, shock and surprise. But it didn't make me want to be a storyteller per se. It made me want to be there. Like I wanted to go live in that world and just, I wanted to immerse myself. And Dan and I have talked about this. I think it's related to this mental characteristic called aphantasia, which is sort of not being able to visually picture things in your mind, which I think led me towards visual mediums like movies.
So you could
so that I could
it.
Picture stuff. So
you
I
could present
see,
it.
Yeah, like I can actually experience it. which to me was, there was a sense of immersion to it. It's like just wanting to like lose yourself, which I think is why, like, for a very, very long time, movies just sort of worked for me. Like all of the kind of like hacky tropes and things that kind of throw off most viewers because you're kind of thinking along with watching the movie. I wasn't thinking. I was just in it. I was just like absorbed into whatever movie it was. It didn't matter. And I think that just that alone made me want to participate, which then eventually led me towards making movies and then eventually writing because, you know, like it's one follows the other. Yeah, I think that's sort of how I fell into it.
I had a Star Wars moment first that's similar to that. I remember very well sitting watching Star Wars for the first time in a movie theater. And it's right when Luke is doing the canyon run down the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Something in my child's brain went, oh, wait, we're wrapping things up. This is coming to an end. This movie is going to stop. And feeling so lost and sad in that moment that we're about to leave this world.
Oh, my God.
Mm. And just, it was the first time in my life I remember my little child's brain just going, no, stay here. Stay in this moment. And just denying the world outside the movie.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. What a great experience. Mine is very, very, very different. Kelsey Breeze.
Okay, so I always was interested in the arts and I was always interested in science and I didn't know which one I was going to pursue going to college. I had done a little bit of stage work. I was a huge fan of theater. And I think what made up my mind to go into theater in college was this particular theater production in San Diego and the production of Thornton Wilder's The Skin of Our Teeth. Which most people probably wouldn't know unless you really know theater or really know American lit. But The Skin of Our Teeth is just a gorgeous play about the Antrobus family. And in the first act, they survive the Ice Age. In the second act, they survive the Great Flood. And in the third act, they survive a Holocaust war, like the post-apocalyptic war. And this was written in like the 40s. And it's meant to be a story of hope about how, you know, the story of mankind survives, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it had a star-studded cast because at San Diego at the time was an arts hub, which I mean, sounds ridiculous now, but it really, really was. Beverly Sills was in our opera, Joan Sutherland. It was incredible. And so on stage, in The Skin of Our Teeth, were some of these names, some of these might you know, but it was Tom Lacey, Harold Gould, Jeffrey Combs, Seda Thompson, Monique Fowler, Blair Brown.
I have
Larry Drake.
Such a thing for Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, of course.
I have such a thing for
Jeffrey Combs. I saw him
Combs.
Do Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream. You know, it's amazing, right?
All
right.
I saw, ever since The Reanimator, I saw him live doing Edgar Allan Poe here in LA.
Okay, John Houseman, right? And Rue McClanahan.
Ooh.
Wow.
There's your Golden Girls tie-in, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a particular moment. It wasn't just I saw the show and I love the show and now I want to be in theater. And I wasn't even sure what. It was kind of like your experience with Star Wars. Like, I need to be in this world.
Yeah.
I absolutely need to be in this world.
Yeah.
But I also knew, I'm not sure I'm an actor, but I knew I needed to be in this world. I don't think I had figured out directing yet. But there was a moment when I had that epiphany. And it was at the end of the second act, where the fortune teller, played by Rue McClanahan, tells Mr. Antrobus to get his family on that boat at the end of the pier because a storm is coming. Guess which storm it is, mm-hmm. right? Get your family in that boat, Mr. Antrobus. Get in that boat, and you ride out the storm in that boat. And as the Antrobus family is leaving stage, this was the stagecraft, they had this massive wind and coins and money because they're in Atlantic City. And the flood is coming. And Rue McClanahan and her fortune teller's booth is pushed off stage by the wind and all this money, the floating in the air and the coins darting everywhere. And that is, and she is speaking her lines as she is pushed off the stage by that, by the flood, by the air and the wind of the flood. And that's the close of the second act. And I'm like, okay, that's what I want to be in.
Nice.
That was the moment where it just coalesced, it crystallized.
Wow. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. Mm-hmm. So, dear listener, at what point did you decide you wanted to be a listener? Trevor, where can they tell us?
Well, we're on Instagram and Twitter as @BigFatGayPod. We're on Facebook as The Big Fat Gay Podcast. Leave us 5 stars there. Leave us 5 stars or review on your preferred podcast platform. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/BigFatGayPod. Or see the articles we talked about at www.bigfatgaybot.baby.
Nailed
it. Wait, can I write that down?
Nailed it.
No. Stuck you know the landing. Point, listener. Come on. Yeah,
I feel right. like most listeners have turned the episode yeah. off by this point. Like, let's be honest.
But not you, person still listening.
Yes.
You're here. We're here. And oh my God, what is that?
I don't know.
Watch out.
Watch out. Two jumpscare endings in a row.
It's Rue McClanahan. McClanahan. Rue McClanahan.